listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining me once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to work with and meet some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. And speaking of top professionals, if many of you were hoping to hear Dr. Matt Polacek again, he will be with us next week. Please plan on being with us then. He's looking forward to being back, and I'm looking forward to having him back with me. Now, in regards to today, I want everybody to know I love today's topic, because one of our great secrets, the great secret of happiness, is finding fulfillment. And it's living with a sense of purpose. And if just being happier is not a great enough motivator for you, people who wake up with a sense of purpose live up to 7 years longer than those who don't. Now, our guest today, Richard Leiter, is the founder of InVenture, the Purpose Company, which is one of America's preeminent executive and life coaching companies. Richard is ranked by Forbes as one of the top five most respected executive coaches and by the Conference Board as a legend in coaching. Richard's 10 books, three of which were bestsellers, have sold over 1 million copies and have been translated into 20 languages. As a keynote speaker, he is one of a select few advisors and coaches who have been asked to work with over 100,000 leaders and over 100 organizations. Now, let me drive that point home again. Over 100,000 leaders from over 100 organizations. Amazing. Richard's work has been recognized by the Bush Foundation, from which he was awarded a Bush Fellowship, and the Fielding Institute's Outstanding Scholar for Creative Longevity and Wisdom Award. Richard, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you, Alan. It's a privilege and a pleasure.
Well, I am so happy to have you on the show. To me, this is a subject, the subject of purpose. All of us waking up each morning and having that purpose in our mind is, to me, one of the greatest gifts that we can all have. So having a chance to read your book, having a chance to have you on, believe me, it is my pleasure. Now, I got a chance to introduce you and to tell you a little bit about the information that we know about you, but how do you describe yourself?
That's a great question. I would describe myself as an explorer. Some people might call it a seeker. I think T.S. Eliot said, or wrote, old men ought to be explorers. Well, I'm a young older adult, vital older adult, and an explorer. And part of that is like my company is called InVenture, that'd be internal exploration. And the other side, obviously, would be adventure, exploring in the outer world. And so I do both. I've been leading walking safaris in East Africa for 3 decades, and I've been exploring the inner world of purpose for 4 decades. So I'd call myself an explorer.
And I think that that's very well put. And the subject that we're going to be focusing on so much is that part about being an InVenture. And Richard, one of the things I know in the new edition, and again, for those that haven't read it, The Power of Purpose is essentially a classic and it's a bestseller. But in the new version, you offer some brand new tools and techniques for people to be able to unlock their purpose. One of the areas that I found was very interesting, and someone like yourself who is getting up there a little bit, is how purpose can evolve during our lives. So share with us and address that on how you are able to discuss that in the book.
Well, first of all, why write the bestseller again? Why come out with a third edition? A couple of reasons. One, I was featured in a PBS special this last year and through this year called The Power of Purpose, and they wanted to know what have I learned and what's new in the purpose message. So in a 90-minute program, which it is, the new book has new content in it. And it's as I've matured, the book's matured, my practice has matured, et cetera. And so, you know, one of the key ingredients is that as we age, we unlock or uncover and discover more about ourselves along the way. So the first stage in purpose I call basically the uncovering stage. And for young people, uncovering, that's their task in life, to uncover who they are and to uncover their gifts, passions, values, how they fit into the world. It's a cradle-to-grave thing, uncovering. But at some point, usually post-adolescence, but not always, we discover, which would be the next phase, that it's really not just about me, it's about us. And I know one of the books, The Purpose-Driven Life, the opening line is, it's not about you. Well, we discover it's not about you. It's about you and us. So we start to broaden our lens or open our lens to a broader horizon, to the community around us, to the world around us, to our family and others. And then there's a third phase, just keeping it in simple three steps. Third phase is discovering it's about all of us. And so the great wisdom leaders and religions and philosophies and psychologies throughout the ages, poets and artists, have always seen the larger lens, have seen the interconnectedness of all life. So people who have the larger third lens of purpose really see the connectivity well beyond themselves, well beyond their own tight communities or families or organizations, and see the broader world. So that's what I call maturing on purpose, and those are the three phases in a nutshell.
Now, how do we get to that third phase? Is that something that that is part of what you call your 24-hour purpose retreat? Is that one of the avenues we can hopefully get a little closer to that third level?
Well, yes, you can take a 24-hour purpose retreat, which is one of the chapters in the book. It's saying, you know, just like you take your car in for a checkup and your body in for a physical checkup and maybe your finances for a checkup, at least around now, around tax time, how about a life checkup? And so the life checkup is, I say, push the pause button, turn your technology off, take 24 hours and answer these kinds of questions, and do some reflection on the next year of your life or the next period, however far out you want to go with that. But basically, Alan, the key here is that purpose is a practice. One of the key lessons learned for me over all these years is that you can look at purpose as kind of this big philosophical legacy, end of life, finality type of thing, but really purpose is a moment-to-moment practice that ends up being your legacy ultimately in your life and your fulfillment and your happiness. But it's played out on a moment-to-moment practice. And I had lunch not too long ago with the happiest man in the world. At least that's what, if you Google happiest man in the world, you'll get Matthew Ricard. Matthew is a French scientist who, at a very young age, went to India, studied Buddhism, became a Buddhist monk, became the Dalai Lama's translator, traveled the world with the Dalai Lama, and created his own educational institutions. And he's one of the people that, along with the Dalai Lama, that in the neuroscience labs in this country, when they measure brainwave activity and they say, who lights up the pleasure center in the brain? Well, this Matthew Ricard, who's a biochemist by training, lit up the pleasure center of the brain more than anybody that's ever been measured in a neuroscience lab before. Therefore, they call him the happiest man in the world. And he's not very happy about it. Because when I was having lunch with him, we were waiting to go in to get our table, and he's dressed in his saffron robes, and I'm dressed in kind of normal, casual street clothes. And we're waiting, standing in the lobby and before being called for our table, and I said, Matthew, I'm going to introduce you to a large group at the university in a couple hours. Tell me, how do you get to be the happiest man in the world? And he turned to me, smiled, and said one word, practice. And that's why he's not very happy about it, Alan, because he said fulfillment comes through practice. It's through mindfulness practices. It's through breathing practices. It's through purpose practices that we learn, and we, like playing the cello or getting good at anything, we can get better at it over and over by practicing it. So part of that 24-hour retreat is introducing new practices and ultimately to be done on a day-to-day basis.
So it sounds like he's even concerned in regards to himself about if he is told too many times that he's the happiest man in the world, that even he may get complacent in it?
Well, that's true. I mean, any of us can fall asleep, and so it's about staying awake in a short life and at any age or stage. And that's exactly right.
Now, do you feel that we've sort of gotten into this time within our culture of what I call spinning a lot of pie plates, but essentially spreading our focus out into a lot of different areas? You know, we're trying to do a lot of things, either doing multiple jobs or balancing, you know, home life and work life and such. Is that one of the things that kind of works against our purpose, is if we're not really learning how to narrow down our focus?
Well, that's right, and it starts with the core question. Purpose is a why question. There are hows, how to do it, what to do, but it's a why question. And the core of the why question is, why do I get up in the morning? That's the core of purpose. Without a reason to get up in the morning, regardless of your circumstances, making clear choices about what you want your life, your day, your moment to be about, that's the practice, that's the discipline. And we've all heard of the Monday blues, where basically it's a worldwide phenomenon that one out of five, so 20%, give or take a few percentage points, people want to get up and go to work on Monday. And Monday is the day that all health breaks loose. And we have the most heart attacks, the most physical problems on Mondays. Why is that? Is it just from a leisurely weekend and then cranking up for the commute or whatever? No, it's not. It's from going out to do something that may not be a good fit for us, may not be a good choice for us. And if you look at the amount of Google searches for health-related topics, it absolutely spikes on Monday morning. And so the question is, what's your why? Why do you get up on Mondays? And a powerful question like that never sleeps. It's going to be with you your whole life, so you can fall asleep, as we said earlier, and not deal with it, but you're going to pay the price at a later stage in life, wondering why you missed part of your life that you were that you walked by, perhaps. So yes, I think that hurry sickness, getting up hurrying, tends to hijack the human moment, the purpose moment, in many ways. We're so busy with our technology that we miss what's right in front of us and inside of us a lot of the time.
Well, and what I think I hear you saying, and for everybody out there, is that they can set up their own measuring point. If you're getting up in the morning and you're not wanting to go to work, or you're not wanting to go do whatever it is that you're supposed to do, maybe you need to readdress your purpose.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of ways to think about it. You can do it through shock value, like the fact from the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. Let's see, it's roughly where I am right now, 1:15 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, at this time, 157,000 people died, were dead. I'm awake. I'm alive. I got another Monday which is today, and there are 52 Mondays a year to get up and deal with the why question. So all you have to do is Monday morning put your hand over your heart. If it's still beating, you get another day. You get another chance to take a shot at it. And so, you know, it's just common sense. I love what E.B. White said, and I quote him all the time. He's an American essayist. He said this. He said, "I arise in the morning torn between a desire to improve or save the world and a desire to enjoy or savor the world. This makes it hard to plan the day." Well, I think it's actually very nicely said, because a full life, a well-lived life, fulfilling life is one where we arise in the morning and we improve or save. And it isn't literally save. This is a way of saying make a contribution. And a desire to enjoy or savor. And I think a balanced life is both. We want both of those, not either or. And so I think it makes it a bit easier to plan the day, to ask yourself, which I'll do a bit later. I'll share a couple practices about how to stay awake on purpose on a day-to-day basis. But I think this quote, it's a good one to remind us of that.
Yeah, and yes, I'm looking forward to some of those exercises. Would you say then, because as you were talking about the waking up and feeling your heart, would you say then that there's an incredible alignment between gratitude and purpose?
Incredible. Yep, incredible connection. And it is gratitude that, is purpose. Basically, in answering the why question, is compassion in action. And compassion in action comes from, first of all, being grateful that you got another day, you got a chance to make a difference, and that sense of who you are in this world. Let me give you one practice right now.
Please.
It's why do you get up in the morning, and as we've already said, your purpose, your aim, your reason for getting up in the morning, and I call it the purpose practice, the 2-minute purpose practice. And waking up on the wrong side of bed doesn't have to determine your day. You can wake up on purpose with this simple 2-minute practice. So all you need is these 2 minutes. Step one is just pause. And this takes no seconds. But the pause is exactly what you were just saying a minute ago, Alan, and that is it's refraining from checking your voicemail, email, and social media for 2 minutes in the morning. So many people, first thing they do when they're really up and about is check their phone, check their email, check their voicemail. If you just don't do that and begin your day without the addictive distraction of your devices. So that's the step one, is pause. Mm-hmm. Takes no seconds, just a reminder. Step two is to breathe. This takes 60 seconds, and the practice here is to sit quietly and take 3 slow, deep, purpose breaths. Until you're feeling centered. So you silently sit for a minute, counting 1 as you inhale and 2 as you exhale for a minute. You do this over and over for 1 minute, and it's all it takes to really just get centered inside yourself so you can listen and get connected. And then the third step, so pause, breathe. Third step is to picture. And this is the other 60 seconds. So you just focus on your day ahead and picture the purpose moments, as E.B. White talks about, the times that you can save, or make a difference, where you might make a positive difference in someone's life. So you envision that person and that difference and affirm silently to yourself, "I will make a difference in that person's life today." And you say the person's name out loud while you're looking in the mirror or while you're thinking about it. If you do this for a week, it's unbelievable the feedback I get from people who kind of, say, "Oh, it's too easy, it's too simple, it can't be that easy." Actually, it is. It's just a common practice of staying centered on what you want your life to be about. And part of it's in the body, the breathing. Part of it's not being distracted. Part of it's the intention of making that difference in just one person's life. And pretty soon, it feels good enough that you start to look for those purpose moments throughout the day, not just that one person. So that's one simple practice anyway.
Well, and the beauty of that is that as you are now paying that forward, the hope is that that person is then going to pay it forward also, and so on and so on and so on. And that's how you make a difference on a broad scale. So I love that. And again, for everybody out there, okay, stop, take a moment, take a breath, but write those down. These are nuggets. These are things. These are jewels. These are things that are going to help your life and the life of those around you. So take a moment. Now, again, if you're driving, don't do this. Don't stop. I mean, unless you're going to stop the car, don't try to write it down. But we will have much of this on our website, or you can go to Richard's website. And again, for those of you that can write things down, you can go to the website. It is richardleiter.com. And I'm going to spell that because it may not be how we would all spell lighter. So it's richardleider.com. And again, if you can't write that down, if you're driving, just go to our website and we'll have all of the information there. But again, I know that if you go to Richard's website there are even more jewels and more nuggets, as well as many of his other books as well are on there. So, Richard, thank you for that. Now, what I wanted to touch on, because I brought up earlier a little bit about, you know, when I made the introduction, I talked about the fact that, you know, that if you start having this sense of purpose, that you're going to be happier. But then the thought was that, is that a great enough motivator for people? So I mentioned the fact that if you wake up with a sense of purpose, you live up to 7 years longer than those who don't. So then the thought, and I've had people that have sent me questions afterwards when I've made a statement like that saying, based on what? So what I'd like to ask, Richard, is what are some of the scientific research pieces of information, or what are the scientific researchers telling us about what an increased sense of purpose does for us, along with the 7 years longer?
It's a great question, and it's one that's asked, you know, why do I need to really unlock my purpose? And I always show a picture, if I'm doing this in an audience, I show a cross-section of a brain. And the last chapter of the new third edition of The Power of Purpose is, can science explain purpose? And the answer is yes, increasingly it can, both in the neuroscience labs and the medical healthcare research facilities. And I'll give an example, because I do in that chapter a lot of attribution to the researchers about this. But one of them is Dr. Majid Fatui, who is a neurologist at Johns Hopkins, graduate of Harvard. He's got a lot of credentials around the brain. And he taught me about the hippocampus, which is the core piece, memory piece in the center of the brain. And he taught me about neuroplasticity. We tend to think about the brain as being declining with age and mm-hmm. shrinking with age. And he said, yes, some of that's true, of course, but he said the hippocampus actually can grow if you do purposeful things with your life. And he said to me this. He said, Richard, imagine a pill, and I wrote this in this chapter, and to your listeners, imagine a pill that would reduce the symptoms of Alzheimer's by as much as 60%, would reduce the possibility of macroscopic stroke by 41%, that would increase sleep and decrease sleep apnea. And he went on and on, and he said, imagine a pill like that. How much would you pay for that, Richard? And I said, well, geez, I don't know. I can't imagine if there was a pill, you wouldn't be able to afford it. He said, it's free. And he said, it's purpose. What we've been now able to measure is purpose in Alzheimer's. And at Chicago, at the Rush Research Center, as part of the Rush Hospitals, where, you know, a lot of people fear of Alzheimer's, a lot of fear of dementia, mm-hmm. you know, an epidemic of it going on. And this isn't going to necessarily take it away. There's a lot, you know, it's a way more complex thing than that. But when they do autopsies, I hate to say, on brains of people who have Alzheimer's, those that they were able to measure a sense of purpose tended to have a quality of life and live longer in spite of the fact that they had this same exact plaques and tangles in their brain as somebody who was basically bedridden with Alzheimer's. They were able to be functioning and out there in the world, doing, getting up in the morning, doing purposeful things. As simple with an aged person as reading to a child or feeding a pet or having a plant. You know, of course, more than that, volunteering and doing other things. It actually reforms the neuroplasticity of the hippocampus in the brain. So lots of things like that out there that are pretty astounding. And increasingly, it's not just brain activity, puzzles, reading, things. It's purposeful activity that really changes the neuroplasticity in the brain. So I think, you know, there's so much, I will say this, that to the skeptics of the world, that Schopenhauer, the German philosopher, said every new idea goes through three stages. So any listener can think of some new idea they had in their life and the reaction of the people around them. But the first idea, or the first reaction to a new idea, like purpose and like the power of purpose and brain and things I just mentioned, is ridicule. People say, oh, that can't be, that's impossible. Second thing is violent or harsh feedback, resistance, I should say. And oftentimes, if you look at medicine and you look at integrative medicine, only 15 or 20 years ago, there was not one integrative medicine program in any medical school in the country. Now every one of them has it, using these kinds of practices, breathing, mindfulness, gratitude, and that. Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, they all use it now as part of their practices. And the third step, so ridicule, violent opposition, and the third one is self-evident. Well, I think purpose is becoming more and more self-evident, and it isn't for everybody, but that's my job, is the way I look at it, is to help individuals unlock their purpose, but also lead the purpose movement in certain ways so that it at least gets a fair shot.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and in fact, I would love for it to be something that is brought to young people in our schools at a much younger age. You know, I don't think that waiting until they get to college, you know, to be able to really start looking at their purpose is the way to go. I think that if we can start getting this information into the schools, I mean, how valuable is this, you know, when you compare it to, you know, if somebody is, you know, is learning a little bit about, you know, their particular state's history, okay, that's nice to know, but how is that going to help them really mold their life? You know,
exactly.
I couldn't agree more, and I would love to see this be something that is brought out to younger people, and if you're going to lead the movement, I'm going to be right there with you trying to help.
Well, so, you know, it's interesting because it is a cradle-to-grave thing. And if you look at, well, let me just give you an example. I go way back when I got out of graduate school in counseling psychology, trying to figure out what to do with the rest of my life. You'd think you'd figure it out in counseling for years of studying it, but it's always about other people. And so I was trying to figure out... And I saw that one of the people that I had actually studied in graduate school was doing a seminar in San Diego, a week-long seminar. And I didn't have any money and didn't have really the wherewithal to be in it, but I went to it. And the man's name is Viktor Frankl, and he wrote a book, which is a seminal book on this topic of purpose, called Man's Search for Meaning. And Viktor Frankl, spelled F-R-A-N-K-L, Viktor Frankl, by the way, Man's Search for Meaning, the Library of Congress says there's 25 books that have been most influential in shaping American history, and this is number 12 on the list. Written by a Viennese psychiatrist, neurologist named Viktor Frankl, who at the height of his career, and he was a protege of Freud's at one point, he was in the stable of thinkers in Europe about these kinds of things like Carl Jung and Alfred Adler and many others. And Frankl, at the height of his, or in the core time of his work, was taken by the Nazis along with his family and was in four concentration camps, and his entire family was killed. He lived, and he was liberated from Auschwitz. He weighed 87 pounds, and he went back to Vienna, where he was teaching residents in what he called logotherapy, or purpose or meaning therapy, before he was taken away. And he healed his body, and after he healed, he sat down and he wrote Man's Search for Meaning in 9 days. Wow. And what he said is this, basically. He said, the last of the human freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. Now, I can't think of any circumstance could be more horrific than the one he had experienced. But we all are pushed by pain and pulled by possibility at different times in our lives, and we have a chance to choose the freedom to choose our attitude in those circumstances. And that's really basically the core of purpose and meaning, and the power of purpose is to choose one's attitude. So if you can start to develop that choice early in life and the power that comes with that, it's going to change the world for a lot of people, and a lot of teenagers who are struggling now are going to have a different life throughout their lives, including their adolescence. So I agree with you, and I would love to see it happen. One of my colleagues who I work with teaches this kind of thing in Seattle to kids in the 3rd through 5th grade. And he happens to be a philosophy professor and chair of the humanities department at Cascadia Community College in Seattle. But he also works in schools and with younger people, and he's amazed, and he amazes me at the stories he tells about how kids really do get it if it's told to them and shared with them in easy ways.
Well, like I said, I am right there with you. For everybody out there, we are speaking with Richard Leiter. He is the author of the best-selling classic, The Power of Purpose. We're going to take a break. Stay with us. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking with Richard Leiter, and the subject matter is The Power of Purpose. Now, Richard, first of all, I love your passion. I love the fact that you not only see how this helps you, but how it's something that can make a positive difference in the lives of millions of people. Now, was there something in your life that influenced you that helped bring out this passion that you have for purpose?
Well, I've had a lot of different triggers in my life, and also people, and I call them fortuitous encounters with people who help me see through a larger lens. One of those I just mentioned was Viktor Frankl. Another one was a man I met in 1969. He came to Minneapolis, where I live. He'd been fired from his job as an Episcopal priest in San Francisco. And he was traveling around the country trying to figure out what do priests do in the next phase of their life. It wasn't an ethical, moral thing. It was something else that he lost his job. As we're having lunch, he pushes a manuscript across the table to me, and he says, "What do you think of this?" And I said, "Let me take a look." And I looked at the title. It was very weird. The title was, "What Color is Your Parachute?" And What Color Is Your Parachute is a book now that at that time that I met Richard Bowles, who was sitting across the table from me, basically he couldn't find a publisher. And the title was strange, and why would anyone care about this? And he went on to publish that book with 10 Speed Press, and it became the only book outside of maybe the Bible or the dictionary that's been on the New York Times bestseller list for 40-some years. And the book is really about discerning your calling. It's not a spiritual book. Well, it is a spiritual book, but it's not a religious book per se, although he's a Christian Episcopal priest. But some people have jobs, some people have careers, and some people have callings. And what I'm about really as a counselor, coach, writer, consultant is helping people to discern their calling. And their calling basically is you do better, you tend to get paid more, you tend to find more fulfillment when you do work that fits who you are. And so Richard Bowles was one of those fortuitous encounters. And to this day, he would say that the book sells millions of copies, has sold millions of copies. He said the most sought-after part of the book is the part about calling, about finding meaning in your work. So many people today don't have a reason to get up in the morning, go to work on Monday, get sick, have a heart attack, or struggle until, thank God, it's Friday. And at the end, they're spending 60% of their life doing something they disliked, maybe even hated. It didn't fit who they are. So part of the work that I think needs to start in youth, and families need to play a bigger role as do schools in helping people discern their gifts, passions, and values. I call it the Got 'em in at School of Coaching, because parents will often come up to me, or people of all ages will come up to me and say, got a minute, can you tell me what I ought to do with the rest of my life? And I'll say, well, if you only got a minute, take out a napkin and write down this. G plus P plus V equals C. The G stands for gifts. The P stands for passions. The V stands for values. And the C stands for calling. If you get up in the morning and you're using your most enjoyed gifts on things that you feel passionate or interest in an environment that values you, where you have a voice, the chances are pretty good that you're going to do okay, and you'll at least close to what, rather than just having a job that pays the bills and gets by, something that really fits you and makes a difference in the world. Now, it takes time to figure this out, and it takes time to figure out what people will pay me for. I understand that, but the starting point is for us individually to do the napkin test, to do our homework. And when Richard Bowles came to town, I was the chief human resource officer for a major bank holding company called, at that time, First Bank. And now it's called U.S. Bank. But I, as a counselor, had a practice going at lunch. I called it Lunch Hour Limited. And I would coach you at lunch if you bought me lunch. And so I was doing this privately on the side. My employer didn't really know about it. You know, I wasn't advertising it, but people found out about it through word of mouth. And what I found was this, which made me at some point actually leave the human resource field, because I had an 80% quit rate. 80% of the people who came and did Lunch Hour Limited over time with me quit and went on to do something else.
I now understand why the employer didn't know about it.
Well, the point is, I agree that I should leave and go on and do this, because if it's that good, I should get paid for it outside of there,
sure.
Which I do. But the fact is that a lot of people who were, they didn't want to lose, really didn't want to do what they were doing, and had never really thought about it, the why, before. Had never thought about gifts, passions, and values, in spite of the fact they had college educations or community college educations or some level of technical expertise, they never really had any mentoring or coaching around the core of what we're talking about here. So I am totally all over the idea of young people getting this earlier and then re-getting it and revisiting it throughout our lives.
Well, I mean, what would be the first step to someone now, you know, they have more than 1 minute, okay? So the person comes in, they say, I'm lost. You know, it could be that they're maybe in this day and age, you know, that they've lost their job. They've been with a huge corporation for the last 25 years. They've lost that job in a downsizing situation, realized that it really wasn't what they wanted to do forever. What's the first step that that person can do other than call you?
Well, there's tools available. Some are free, some are low cost, but I've developed one myself called Calling Cards. So I don't want to shamelessly commercialize anything, but Calling Cards is an amazing tool used all over the world in schools, in colleges and universities, in businesses, and it's 52 cards that in about 15 minutes or 30 minutes, if you want to give it a more time, you can come up with your answer to that formula. It'll help you discern what your top gifts, passions, and values are. And so it's a deck of cards, but it's a well-researched deck of cards that helps you. And you can give the cards to somebody else and have them do the cards on you and give you some feedback. So you can do it in a small group. You can do it in a classroom. You can do it on your own. Do it with your parents. There's a lot of ways to do it. But you got to do your homework, Alan. There's just no way about it. There's no silver bullet. You got to go in venture and look inside. I have a new book that just came out called Work Reimagined. And the core of that book is about calling cards. And the first chapter in the book is this. It's the end of work as we know it. The work world has shifted. It has changed. We have to know what our offer is and how to continually refine and reinvent our offer in the world, no matter what age or stage we're at. And to do that, you have to do some homework. So there's some tools to do that. You can do the calling cards for free on a website. You can go to my website, and it'll lead you to the calling cards exercise where you can do it actually online for free.
That's great. And again, that website is richardleiter.com. And again, if you can't write it down right now, just go to our Answers for the Family site, and that information will be on there. Richard, we've got a question and a comment that has come in via email. And again, I thank those people that take the time. I know often I hear from them that say that, you know, they couldn't listen live, that they've subscribed to it on iTunes, but they want their question asked. This one reads, how do you translate your message to the young people today who seem so caught up in themselves and have such, quote, entitled attitudes? There appears to be such a lack of empathy, compassion, and honesty in the teens of today. Yes, there are many good kids, but in mass, do we really have a huge issue that is spiraling out of control, or is that what the media and special interest groups want us to see?
There's a lot of layers in that question. So
yes.
Let me answer it in the... first of all, everybody's an experiment of one. In spite of the fact we go through these stages, everybody is that. And Carl Jung said this, the greatest damage you can do to your kids is your own unlived life. So the starting point is to live your life with a sense of purpose, living your gifts, passions, and values, because that's what... It'll at least give some grounding. May not change the tide in the broader sense, but you do what you can by living from the core yourself in certain ways. And there are places out there that are doing retreats on this in schools and things like this. I'm on the board of an organization called Youth Frontiers, which is doing retreats on this kind of thing across the country in schools to try to plant the seed. But I agree with the caller. I think technology and hurry sickness are rampant problems right now for people. And this lack of EQ or emotional intelligence is, it's everywhere. And I don't know what to do about it other than, you know, live my life and try to do the best I can discerning and following my own calling.
Well, and then we have a comment that reads, I love the title of your work, and I think people get off track thinking responsibilities are aligned with purpose. I am a mother of three beautiful but sometimes challenging children. I believe that being a mother isn't my purpose. It is the creativity and love that I put into that part of my life that makes it such a fun and fulfilling purpose. I do the same with my work as a restaurant manager. Perhaps the old adage says it best. Is it not what you do, but how you do it? And it says, do you agree? And it's signed Caroline J.
Caroline J., I agree 100%. It's who you bring to what you do. And purpose is that. And there's three myths that keep people from perhaps agreeing with Caroline or us on this. Number one is that purpose is a cause. It's not a cause. You don't have to have a cause. You don't have to save the world or the planet. It's an aim. It's what you want your day and your work. It's who you bring to what you do. Secondly, the second myth is that purpose is a revelation, that somehow it'll be revealed to you if you just get old enough, but for now I just have to pay the mortgage or do whatever. Purpose is a practice, as we've already talked about, something mm-hmm. that you can do moment to moment every day. And the more you do it, the more you realize how much part of you really it is, that it's part of our evolutional impulse as human beings to matter, that to make a difference in certain ways. And the third myth, so cause, revelation, the third myth is that purpose is a luxury. It is absolutely not a luxury. As we said in your opening comment, Alan, purpose is fundamental to who we are as human beings. And it's you often find some of the most purposeful people don't have two nickels to rub together, don't have money, don't have luxury, and it's who they bring to their community and their family and their work and their people around them. And it is fundamental to our health and our healing and our happiness, ultimately, and we're learning that. So,
well, I just looked up and I saw the time. We've got about 2 minutes. And what I'd like to know is, what are you working on next? What is next for Richard Leiter?
There is a new organization that has just come on, it's just being created, called the World Purpose Forum, WPF, World Purpose Forum. You can Google it, just go to worldpurposeforum.com. And it's about bringing purpose to the world in all the ways, and it's being done by people who really know how to build an organization. I'm more of a content practitioner, ambassador, if you will, and these are people who really have and know how to bring purpose to the world in certain ways. So I've thrown my hat in to become a thought leader and a content provider as part of the World Purpose Forum. So I'm pretty excited about that. And the other thing is that AARP in Washington has created the Life Reimagined program or initiative. This is the largest trade organization in the world, 40 million members, AARP. Used to think about it for older people, but now it's people of all ages who are signing up for Life Reimagined. Millions of people are going on the Life Reimagined .org website and learning how to reimagine their lives at any age or stage. And so I'm the chief curator of the Life Reimagined Institute. So those are the two biggies, Alan, I'm working on. The World Purpose Forum and the Life Reimagined Institute, those are my projects for the future.
Well, Richard, I would love to have you back. I would love to talk more on those. I thank you so much for your books. I thank you for your passion. And I think, you know, more than anything else, I thank you for taking the time to help with these organizations, to set these things up so that you can do something that now is going to make a positive difference in the lives of millions of people. So for that, thank you.
Alan, thanks so much. You've been a pleasure to talk to.
All right. And for everybody else out there, please Tune in next week when our guest Kimberly Rogers, author of Child Help, Short and Long-Term Therapeutic Foster Care to Abused and Neglected Children. She's going to share vital information about our foster care system. And if you missed or you want to share one of our shows with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or check us out and subscribe to the show on iTunes. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check some of our latest posts out. And if you like them, please click on the like button, like us, and spread the word to your friends. That's the best way that we can continue to try to make a positive difference in the lives of other people. For everybody out there, thank you so much for listening. Be with us next week. And in the meantime, be good humans.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.